You know, I got here this morning and I looked at the calendar to see who was going to be bringing the word, and I looked and it said Kobe Bryant. And I was like, whoa, this is pretty cool. But it actually said Toby. It was Mike's writing. I couldn't read it. So, but I think we're going to be blessed more with having Toby here to bring the word.
Yeah, well, thank you. I was going to start out by talking kind of about myself, my testimony, but I'm not going to waste your time. As you can see, we have a circus over here. That's my circus, a lot of it. We've got Shirley that begins down my path and says to me, you know, Toby, when you met Amber, but do you know anything about music? Because you got to have background with me here, and I know nothing. I'm just a dumb jock. So we got over that hurdle. Well, then, so she says, you know, Toby, there's a talent, a gift out there. You either can read music or hear music. Well, I don't know what she's got, so after that performance, no. So she always gives me the illustration that people can read it or hear it, and we're blessed to have her do that. And also blessed with Danielle and her service here with the kids. And I want to thank you guys and this congregation. I know marriage is everything. And Reg and Danielle and the time that I've got to know this family and just the strength and the power that they provide me in my journey. And I know this congregation, this church has a big part of Amber Ray and her development, her equipping, and allow me to share that life with her. So it says a lot about what you guys are doing here, so thank you. In all seriousness now, we're going to get started. A little background just on the message today. Anybody know Jesus? Raise your hand if you know Jesus. Okay, that's a good start. How about the gospel of Jesus? A lot of different ways, isn't there? A lot of different ways that can be looked at or articulated or brought out. When you think about Jesus in full-time ministry for only 3 years and the impact that he had. My background, I come from the coaching profession, and so a lot of if I get a little coachy here, forgive me, I'm not perfect in my presentation. But I refer back to those 3 years of his passion and his sandals from synagogue to synagogue and all the things that he did down that path. Anybody familiar with the author Timothy Keller? Read the book by Timothy Keller and Prodigal Son. And that's where the feast direction today that I'm going to go with and just the heart of that message. But when Jesus went from synagogue to synagogue, just think, you know, current day, okay, if we went to the state house right now and went in front of legislators and say, I am the way in the direction of others, the Father. Just think we went there and said, to say that in front of the legislators. And without me, no bills can be passed. And Jesus did that from every small village and synagogue throughout, and he got persecuted, didn't he? And he got beat up over time. And so obviously we have the crucifixion at the end. So, you know, I just picture that, and I picture the cross, and as he's going to Calvary, he's carrying that cross up and all the things that he had to go through and suffer through. I just visualize that. And Timothy Keller, in the study that he goes through, he's a pastor out in Manhattan in New York, and he goes around the countryside. He's got over 6,000 members in his congregation. He goes out, and he gets called to go give these kind of messages and speak. And he says, there's a lot of different directions I can go. But he said, the one that I always come back to is that of the prodigal son and the heart and the feast that comes with that. And so you've got the younger son and the older son. And so I'm going to kind of talk about that as kind of the direction today and how I came to this message. In your bulletin there, there's a guide that you can kind of go through there. The Feast of the Father, according to the Bible, because of our true elder, God is someday going to make this world home again. He's going to wipe away the death and wipe away all the suffering, wipe away all the tears, and give us new bodies that run and never weary. And it will be the ultimate feast. In Acts, if you follow along with me, Acts 2:24, but God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. So as he went and he gave the message, and as he built his team of disciples, he built 12 men up, he equipped them, and it's not one of those things, he found just the average guy, he found the fisherman. He didn't go out and say, hey guys, come over here, I got a plan for you. He went out one by one, conversation to build his team. And even through that process of building his team, they still deceived him and turned against him. So that's just the world we live in, and I think about how we approach that as Christians and how we wear that in our heart and share that in our heart. Even Jesus struggled defining that and perfecting that process. I'm going to use a little visual aid up here. And this was actually shared, my wife and I. We went with some friends down to Kansas City, watched the Chiefs-Bears game. And it was a Baptist church. But I thought it was a great articulation. And it brings me to a lot of thoughts just in the world of education. I think it was Dr. Yang Zong or something came through our associate school boards. And he said, in the struggle, and I think about these young kids up here and the process they're going through and understand a personal life with Jesus. And they get to 18, and we go through. I got a sixth grader now going through her first year of the confirmation process, and she's going to eventually, eighth grade, you know, give her faith statement, and do that process, that checklist, the moralistic religious things, and those are important, but that's not the true meaning of what we need to accomplish. And so we went down there to Kansas, and they gave this articulation. The guy talked about the Zoe life and the bio life, and so he's got a chart, and over here we got the Zoe life. Does anyone know what the Zoe life is? What does Zoe life mean? Amber, do you remember? I'm going to call you out here. It's God life, okay? So you got God life. And getting back to the ASBSD convention, and then you got the bio, and that's the stuff, just the stuff that we, in the world, the moralistic religious ideas. Okay, so just a basic pattern. So we go down to this church and go through this process and listen to this. And it talks about, this Dr. Zing talks about, I connect the dots. And when he came to speech in August after we came back from our trip, and he talked about 53% of our graduates at college end up in our parents' basement. And that's coming out of our university system. So why is that? And we talked about the creativeness and the assembly line product that, you know, we equip our kids for jobs for, and how do we, and you as parents, we want to be at home and love them and take care of them, but we don't want them to live in our basement either. That's not healthy either. And so we got to talk to them like adults from the get-go. That's before the confirmation process. And I think this Zoe life about living a godly life versus a bio life and the stuff that exists. So you think you start in a relationship and you're born, and somebody tells you about the love of Jesus. And so you can start down that path, and all of a sudden, things are going well. You start getting it, and then you got that downturn, you know, and then you keep going through life, and you get these things that come up, this godly life that maybe adults or elders or people equip you with, and you start making your own decisions, become an independent thinker, and just up and down. It's this in and out of relationship with Jesus, and it's the Bible. It's this, you know, the good and the bad, the trials, tribulations that come with life. And so there's kind of that peak moment early on in your faith time, you got your lows, and it just seems like life just, I mean, you know, you probably tell your, I could tell my own testimony on my highs and my lows when I've gone through life, and I'm sure you all can come up here and share yours too, and the important people in your life that get you through those times. But, you know, we want to equip each of us as faith and Christians to, you know, just stay steady. Talk about steady Eddie, and just kind of stay the course and stay the path. And what does that look like when we get alongside somebody, and when they're equipped, how do we get them through those times? When they fall, how do we get along beside them? Now, just a great illustration of the prodigal son in that description of the parable as we opened up today. And so when we just went through Acts 22, go to Revelation 19. So too, at the end of the book of Revelation, at the end of the story, there is a feast, the marriage supper of the Lamb. The Lamb is Jesus, who was sacrificed for his sins, the world, so that he could be pardoned and brought home. So ultimately, we've got some awakenings. We got some wake-up calls along our path and across our journey. But at the very end, there's a feast to be given. And Timothy Keller says, I can go a lot of different directions. I can speak a lot of parables, but my favorite is that of the prodigal son. And, you know, he talks about when he went in 1989 out to Manhattan in New York, and he thought when he started his first church, he was going to see a lot of the younger brothers, you know, that went out and were sinful, and it was a very recognized sin through the prostitutes and spending the wealth and the fathers and reputation of the family. But when he got out there, he found out there's a lot of Midwest people that went out there, and he found a lot of the heart issues within the congregation. When he really got to that intimate conversation, it was the older brother, and it's the older brother heart. So when we recognize sin, it don't matter if you steal a paperclip off a desk or you steal a car or you look another one lustfully, sin is sin. And so the message there, the fact of the matter is that it doesn't matter where you're at as a perspective of as Christian. It's, do you live that life of Zoe life or bio life? And what do we focus on? And who do we get around to pick us up? And so there, at the end, there's a feast. And in this parable, there's a feast that happens. So, in Revelation 21:22, the feast happens in the New Jerusalem, the city of God that comes down out of the heavens to fill the earth. And so under our bio is the study of life from birth to death. This is the stuff or the earthly things. I say this to my daughters, and they just think I'm crazy. Their dad, you know, I say they fixate on some things once in a while, and she's a sixth grader, doesn't have a cell phone. I'm the meanest dad in the world, you know, those kind of things. It's the earthly stuff we don't worry about, and so that's that coachy thing that comes out. Then there's the Zoe life that transcends beyond the physical life, and how do you perspectively get that play? It takes a lot of time. It takes maturation and years and the perspective that you're never going to get there. So as we look at this in the story of the prodigal son and the five awakenings, you can fill in the blanks as you go. The prodigal son experiences five awakenings on his way back to his father. The first one, longing. So you got a son who went out, he took his fortune, went out and spent it all and did a lot of sinful things that from a judgmental society, we look at that and go, ooh, bad person, never want to be around that. Don't let your kids hang around that person. He figures out life. He's lower than the slaves. He's with the pigs and the sty, and he comes back. And during that time, the patriarch, the father at that time, obviously has the quippings of the outfit, and he sees the son in the distance, and the son's running, and he lifts up his skirt, and he runs and embraces the son, and the older brother's watching this, and they get the fattened calf. You've heard the parable, and they get this. They're going to have a big feast and a celebration. Well, everybody's like, wow, you know, what is that about? Why is that happening? And so, you know, you think about the gospel of Jesus and what Jesus wanted to get to when he was at the synagogues. It wasn't the younger son that he was after. It was all the authorities. It was the leadership in the church that didn't get it. You know, when you want to define what the it factor is it the person that you know is sinful and you love them anyways and bring them back home? Or is it the moralistic religious checklist person that, you know, sits there and won't even go to the feast at the end of the story? And so it's just a great parable, just great illustration, especially when I work with people in the people business, and you look at people where they're at perspectively. I think Tim Keller hits it out of the park with that, and with Jesus lust. And you know, and don't quote me on this, but I believe when I was in my readings or my understanding of this, before Jesus died, before he was crucified on the cross, this is where he laid his conversation. This is what he used. He used this parable all the way to the cross. And so there's a lot of great stories and a lot of great characters in the Bible. And I there's some pastors that have gone through theology, and I've listened to them speak, and there's Pastor Ballman and Pastor Kirk Flaw back home, listen to those guys. They just blow you out of the water like, God, they're just amazing, you know, theologically. And I look at the character, but I just, you know, I think about Jesus, and I think about his last teaching. This is where he went. You know, this is where he stayed in the gospel. And it just warms my heart, and it always will stick with me, that one of my favorites. So the five awakenings. Longing, there's got to be more. That younger son went out, he realized there's a longing, there's got to be more. Then he had regret. I wish I could start over. Who's going to give me that fresh start? Help, I can't do this alone. Who's going to get alongside him? Who's going to get him back to his feet? And then love, God loves me deeply. And so in the blanks there, number five, life. Now this is living. It's a rehearse, it's a sorry story. So, you know, we're all going to have a story to tell. And we're all, it could be good. You know, talk about this right here, illustration. The good story, the fail story, the sad story, and getting back up once you get knocked down. My daughters love Rocky Balboa, by the way, but anyway, that's a whole different deal. Luke 15:22-24, as the father was presenting this topic, and Jesus using this parable, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. This son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And so that's life, and that's bringing life to the Christian message and the Christian understanding and relationship. In the Father, which is the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, God's using a whole dimension there spiritually, the physical, physical understanding of the picturization of this process happening. And so the abundantly equals exceeding in the blank there. So we want to live life abundantly. And how do we do that? Through the Zoe life, through the bio, the stuff. Where do we put our hope? Where do we put our trust? The Good Shepherd obviously is the Jesus statement. So you've got the good shepherd at the end, you know, the crucifixion or sacrifice of the lamb back in the beginning of the Bible, and then as we start defining what sacrifices are, this is the true sacrifice. It's the spiritual sacrifice of Jesus dying and resurrecting from the dead to prove that purpose statement of the ultimate feast when we come. But along this journey, as you follow along there, I think I have it in italicized there, bold, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. So now we have a little bit of a competition. We've got the thief, right? We've got the thief on one hand, which is Satan, and we've got the shepherd on the other. And so as this articulation's happening, the sun's out doing his thing, and the welcoming party, the big excitement, the big party's starting to happen. And we're kind of setting the stages for what's to come. And this is in all our lives. This is for us to think now in the bio, the physical, the understand now of the return of Christ and the eternity, the heavenly understanding, and all the things that we need to put our hope and trust in. So we got the thief voice versus the shepherd voice. Think about those voices that you or during your prayer time or things that come up and you shake your head. I mean, there's a lot of earthly stuff that you just go, oh, I just get that. Really, you know, I mean, especially during this political season. So you got the thief voice versus the shepherd voice. In John 10:10, I have come that you may have life, and that is abundantly. So John 10:10 reminds us of that. So you look at your past, and that's the thief voice. The thief condemns or idolizes. If you follow along there, the thief condemns or idolizes. Jesus forgives and redeems. Jesus forgives and redeems. So in that first statement in your past, and we think about the prodigal son, and he went out and did his stuff, okay, the bio life, and he's returning back, and he was, the thief throughout that process condemns that and gets him to be an idol of something and idolizes that process, and the forgiveness of the Father welcomes that back home. It's that process of forgiveness and redemption through the thief voice versus the shepherd voice, takes the brokenness and makes something beautiful. So then we look at the present. So that, you know, we look at our past and 53% in our basement, and how do we equip our children to be successful in the secular world and in the church so that they do want to go to church when they go to college and get alongside somebody that wants to have these conversations. It's not easy. So you look at the present and the thief voice. The thief is to confuse and mislead. So during this process, think about times when you're struggling, and the thief will confuse and mislead you. Jesus, in this process, encourages and guides us. Encourages and guides us. And you think about Jesus when he's building his team of 12, and he didn't say, hey, folks, come over here, I got a plan, right? He went to the people, and he went to them and had these conversations. And you think of the future. So now we're going to the future, and God's going to present this feast, and you got this older brother with a kind of his eyebrows up, going, "What's going on here? I've done all the right things. I've been moralistic. I've stayed back. I've worked my tail off on the farm. Why don't I have the same things that I'm feeling that my brother's feeling now?" So you've got the thief who discourages. You got Satan who, during this discouragement, steals life. And then Jesus gives that increasing hope. So we just finished the season of encouragement in the birth of Jesus in Christmas time. And as we approach the Easter season and the hope to come, so Jesus gives us that increasing hope. It's something to reflect on and think about. Was referred to in some of the conversations and in the message when this was presented was the spirit. Look at it as spiritual carbohydrates, and if you got to be equipped, you got to have those carbohydrates. You got to be nourished throughout that process, because if not, the teeth of the thief will set in, and it's a tough place to be. And then there's kind of the problem statements there. Problem one. Our longing for more is terminal. So our longing for more of the bio life, okay, the longing for it's terminal. and the death that comes with that. And problem two is we are far too easily pleased and allow Satan to steal our past, our present, and our future. So we like pleasure, we like comfort food, we like to be comfortable in the bio life, right? But again, we want to be sure that those problems that exist, the longing for more of that is terminal, and we are far too easily pleased and allow the thief voice versus the shepherd voice steal the past, our present, and our future. In italicized there, it says, our desires are not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us, like an infinite child who wants to go on making mud pies in slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea, by C.S. Lewis there. So a statement with that is kind of wrap that up, is our desires are not our problem. Our desires are a gift for a longing for home. So really it's that thief versus the shepherd, and what we end up desiring through the Zoe life, the God life, versus the bio life, in a perspective that, you know, we're not going to be perfect. We're going to have some high points and some pretty nourished and encouraged opportunities, but there's also going to be those low points, and how we get through those and the process of that is vitally important. In Luke 9:24, whoever wants to save life will lose it, but whoever loses life for me will save it. And one other way to look at that is God's economy is one way that I remember that statement. And the story's big idea there in this process is when the brother comes home and there's the feast is to start and the calf is there and the table's present and people are to come to the table, and what does the older brother do? He turns from that. He does not come to the feast. And so is it a head issue? Is it a sin issue? Or is it a heart issue? And that's kind of the message here today when we're ultimately going to come to the table. I was referred to when I was in youth group, and just your difference between heaven and hell is 18 inches. And you've probably heard that between your heart and your head. And there's a lot of great wisdom out there, a lot of head knowledge out there, but it's the heart. And I think the relationship of that brother, older brother, younger brother, and the heart issue that lies there, I think can resonate with all of us in our journey, no matter where we're at. When Jesus is enough, and that last in the story is a big idea, you will always have more. And the younger son in this parable, he had a wake-up call. He had a wake-up call and realized that the bios do not deliver, and was able to come home. And what an awesome process Jesus takes us through to understand that. And the older brother, a crisis made for eternity, doesn't celebrate, gets angry, gets very prideful, and will not go to the supper, to the feast. And so I just challenge you today to look at those two sides of the table, and maybe trials and tribulations in your life, and we've all been on the side of the younger brother. We all knew the father existed. We've probably many times more not been the older brother in a lot of situations. And, when Tim Keller went out in 89 to build the church in Manhattan, New York, he was a Midwest guy, went out there, and all these Midwest people went to find that better life and went to New York, and he started, like I said, getting these churches, and he got to the bottom of it, and a lot of those people, those families out there in 89 or whatever it was, just the time frame is really not that important, but they said that they were beat up so bad by their home church and how they were encouraged and equipped, and that's why when they went to college, maybe they take years off from going to church or being around a faith community, because they're going to go experience things on their own, and then we know as a church need to welcome them back. And so as he went out there and built that, he really felt a heart in that. And I have a heart for the marriage process too, and I think our marriages are, example of the bride and the church, the relationship. We have to harness that and use that in our everyday lives with our ones beside us. And so I think it all relates. I think it all, how you build the church is through the marriage and the perspective of what the God and the church and the bride of the church is to that in that relationship. And he put this in the parable of Jesus before he went to the cross, and he leans on this parable right before his death. And there's God's timing and purpose is perfect, correct? So, it's just something to perspectively that it really sticks with me. The Zoe party, so really what's going on, so this father creates this great big celebration party and the big food. What he's doing is he's creating a Zoe party. So he's bringing people to understand the God life. He's having this big celebration, the Zoe party in the house. And again, the older brother was always in love with the bio. So regardless of what the older brother did moralistically as a religious state, he was still always in love with the bio. He thought he was going to get that. He was going to get the estate. He was going to take his more than half, and he should be rewarded more because he was a good-natured human being. So ultimately, the story here is turn in your bios, turn in the stuff, let it go, drop it, and turn your heart to prayer and have a Zoe perspective in our marriages, in our churches, in our schools, in everything that we lead with, in our children, so that when they leave, they don't live in your basement. All right? Thank you, and we'll close in prayer. Dear Father, thank you for this time and this opportunity. Thank you for this congregation and how they equipped individuals and families and just this opportunity to speak and to be part of the process that this church is going through, and the understanding perspectively as Christians, how we act and how we walk and how we represent and speak. And not only just the head knowledge that we can come across as very intelligent and we got it and the it factor that's defined, but the heart in which we do so and how we present that to one another in this church and outside these doors. And it's a very difficult process and a very challenging, persecuted process that we all go through. But to be confident and bold in what we do and what we stand for, Lord, and just thank you for all that you do and bless this time together today. Amen. And also, when Bill Buck is down playing golf and sitting in a hot tub right now, and he calls you in August to go golfing, that's how this ends up being. So just let you know. Thank you.